had a pretty good first-hand look at a lot of damn good quarterbacks, and that's got to count for something. I'm not a total idiot, is what I'm saying.
Not a total just idiot. No one ever argued
just a little
total
bit.
Idiot. Just the percentage is what we argue about from time to time.
Oh, yeah. Chris Sims unbuttoned Ahmed Farid. What a jerk he is. He thinks I am a total idiot, or at least close to it. It is a good, arguable point. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
You're part idiot, too. I mean, you work with me.
100%.
So no doubt.
All you have to do is watch, like, 5 minutes of the podcast, and you realize that.
No Chris, doubt. What's up, man?
And we're it's low-tech. It's high-tech, but low-tech, where I put the little thing in there, too, the microphone of the – my microphone up to the phone. See, I'm already an idiot. We're like 30 seconds in.
We're making it happen, baby. This is the new COVID-19 era. I can't wait to get back into the office and get into a normal studio so there's like no delay in us talking and, you know, things are just more professional. I'm sick of looking into an iPad and doing this crap, but we got to get her done. We got the quarterback countdown. That continues today. We're going to take some questions from the homies. No Big Phil today. I don't know what he's got going on. He gave me the runaround of a lot of bullshit is what he did. What are you doing? I'm busy. Okay. So he can't make it. So it'll just be you and me. And that's good. We'll have lots of time to conversate about these four quarterbacks we're going to hit.
So the four quarterbacks, and I didn't know until yesterday when you sent this to me, the four quarterbacks are very intriguing. And all of them either moved up or down at least five spots from where they were last year. So some high volatility in your four quarterbacks that we'll reveal today. So we'll get to that. But first, you're right. Let's get to the homies reacting to what you did last time. And last time you were on, you did, let's see, what have you revealed so far? It was Daniel Jones at 22, Baker Mayfield at 21, Jimmy Garoppolo at 20, and then Derek Carr at 19. A lot of respect for Derek Carr there. I like that. First, here's the first question. This one's kind of just general for those who might be just jumping into this podcast for the first time, jumping into your rankings for the first time. It comes from C. Santana, 1983. So he asks, is this list for past accomplishments, predicting this year's performance, or predicting the remainder of their career? So clarify once again what this list is all about for you.
Yeah, cool. That's a good question, C. Santana, 1983. I appreciate that. I think this is how I formulate this list. It's all about 2020. And, you know, other guys that have listened or other people that listen to the podcast, my thing here, C. Santana, is I'm a coach. My butt's on a hot seat. And here's my top 40 quarterbacks and the pecking order of who I, you know, think is the best one, experience, talent, whatever it's the best one, and so on down. And I've kind of, you know, not kind of, I've weaved through this, worked at it very hard. You know, I kind of keep a running list as the season goes. The season gets over, I make a few lists. I'm always kind of dabbling in it. And then when I get close to knowing I have to make a real list once again and it's time, I then go back and watch a little film of all these guys one more time just to have some thoughts, negatives and positives that I like about their game. And then I try to sit down and hammer down the top 40. And, you know, I'm pleased with where it is so far. But that is the guidelines. Hot seat, 2020, got nothing to do with career accomplishments. It has nothing to do with what we think you might be 5 years from now. It is all about right now. And you know, the NFL is a what have you done for me lately business. So that's the only thing that counts.
So it's trying to project right now for this season. And also, Chris, to get clicks, right? You're trying to get as many clicks
shut
as
up,
possible
shut
to
up,
your
okay?
to your website or whatever you have in the back.
Yeah, yeah. Right? You're a real asshole. See, you're trying to flame the fires here because you know that drives me crazy when people say that. So,
yeah.
Yes, I'm not doing this for clicks or clickbait or trying to stir the pot. This is what I believe. I work hard at it. As you know, I'm very passionate. And there you go. There's my spiel.
And because you want to be right. You don't want at the end of the year to be like, wow, I generated a lot of whatever clicks are. But I got people to talk and then I was look like an idiot by the end of the year. So ultimately, you want to be right. So 22, you had Daniel Jones and Smitty's picks, writes us, man, I have him in the 40s. So apparently Smitty Picks is doing his own top 40. He has him in the 40s, top 50 actually there. Too many fumbles, and the Giants were down by two touchdowns a lot. So the defensive coverages he was facing were a little soft. Dude, what do you take of that criticism, Chris?
Well, I mean, listen, the fumble thing is real. The fumble issue, we've discussed this. You know, out of all the issues you could have as a young quarterback, that's probably like the easiest one to fix. It's actually, there's a lot of positives about it because he fumbles a lot because he's so tough and patient in the pocket and trying to listen to his coaches and go through the reads to where, you know, sometimes he forgot, let me just make some plays. Let me get out of here. Wait, one's not open. Two's not open. Wait, let me reassess the pocket. Oh, it's collapsing. Let me get out. And that's an easy thing to fix. He'll go back and watch film. He can drill that on the practice field, even without coaches. And to say Daniel Jones isn't in the top 40 or the top 50, again, listen, that's just couldn't be more absurd. It could not be. Daniel Jones has got big time talent. Daniel Jones, out of the rookie quarterbacks, you know, you could argue he had the worst supporting cast around him. And like Kyler Murray, they were kind of on a weekly basis like, hey, if you don't throw for 300 yards and three touchdowns, we can't win a game. So, you know, and also I just want to say to the conversation of, oh, most times I looked up and they were down by two scores. Well, yeah, the Giants defense sucked and they couldn't run the ball and they couldn't pass protect. And there's really not a go-to wide receiver on the roster. So, you know, again, here's the old adage, right, that you hear me fighting all the time. We're going to blame one guy for a whole laundry list of team problems. It's going to be his fault. No, I would tell you a lot of the games they won and were competitive in were because of Daniel Jones. And the fact of what did he have this year? Three games of 300 yards and four touchdowns or something like that. It's some stat like that. He had some really impressive performances, again, with very average supporting cast. So I don't agree with that Daniel Jones assessment at all. Good arm, accurate, big, tough in the pocket, and a good athlete. One of the best runners at the quarterback position already in the NFL. So, you know, Smitty, you might have been, I don't know, you might have got into my stash upstairs and smoked some of my daddy's cigars on that comment. I'm sorry.
So Pete threw a stat in here that kind of backs you up and shows that he wasn't really that successful or didn't rack up a bunch of numbers in garbage time. Per Pro Football Focus, in garbage time last year, Jones had a 53% completion percentage, no touchdowns, one interception, just a 57 passer rating. So he didn't, even if he was down a few touchdowns and it was garbage time, he didn't pad his stats with that. A little bit more on the fumbles here, Chris. This one comes from Uncle Gus NYC. Jones had 18 fumbles last year. Carson Wentz had 16. So I think maybe he is intimating that maybe, you know, hey, we like Carson Wentz and he fumbled a bunch. Daniel Jones, first year, fumbled a bunch, but not necessarily a black eye to the year that Daniel Jones had there.
No, well, I think, you know, some of the similarities there are what did we see from Carson Wentz at the end of the year? A guy that didn't have much of a supporting cast, right? So then he's got to push the envelope of making plays, and I got to do stuff because I don't have anybody else here out here who can do anything. So it's on him, you know, and when you have to be that guy, it's going to lead to mistakes at times because you do have to, you know, play near the edge of danger and yet, okay, I'm making great things happen. And Carson Wentz certainly has to do that. And, you know, Carson Wentz, if there is a weakness to his game, sometimes he needs to just like, hey, the play's over. Don't try to break seven more tackles and make a throw 30 yards down the field. Like sometimes just take the sack or throw it away. And Daniel Jones a little the same way, but more in the pocket passer sense of where, hey, you've been sitting there for 3.5 seconds. You've patted the ball a bunch of times. Don't pat it again. And just because the coach said go to the fourth read, you know, get that internal clock speeding up a little bit. And I think, you know, again, I think he will. And I think he's a good athlete. So that's what was his name? Uncle Gus. I like
Uncle Gus NYC. Yeah.
Good job, Uncle Gus, New York City. Way to go.
And you've mentioned it before that not all fumbles are created equal. A lot of the RPO that we see the Eagles run to, and that causes some fumbles for Carson Wentz. And Pete notes as well that of all those fumbles, Carson Wentz actually recovered 25, the most in the NFL over the last four seasons. So he has 48 fumbles the last 4 years. He's recovered a lot of them himself, so they haven't actually hurt the team.
Yeah, well, yeah, and you're right. Not all fumbles are created equal. I mean, you know, if you're getting blindsided a whole bunch of times every week in a game, I expect you to fumble. I mean, you know, you can't do everything. You can't block guys, look over your shoulder, look down the field, deliver big-time passes, move in the pocket. So, yeah, between that, you know, yeah, some of the read option stuff, that's going to cause some fumbles. But, again, I'm not really concerned with either one of those areas. Listen, if we get to this point next year and you and me are on the pod again and we're still talking about Daniel Jones fumbles,
yeah,
then there might be an issue. And then I got to go, no, this guy's got some internal clock issue. He's not. He doesn't have good awareness, but I don't see that happening. I don't. It wasn't a problem in college, and again, I think the guy's smart, very well or very easily coached, and I think he'll make the proper adjustments.
So at number 21, you had Baker Mayfield, and at Grizzly with three Z's and four Y's, at Grizzly asked, how did Baker go from a good rookie year to a crap sophomore year with a better offense? He didn't say crap, but I edited that.
You mean he said shit? Is that what he said?
He did. I can confirm that. Yeah. So yeah, what happened with a better offense?
Well, let's see. I mean, first off, year one, the expectations aren't real high, right? They started Tyrod Taylor. The offense kind of struggled. Whoa, Baker Mayfield come in, the Heisman winner. He's got some charisma and everything's good. And Cleveland's expectations levels were very low and they exceeded them. So, oh, it was great. But I would also tell you in that year, there was a little bit of a managing of Baker Mayfield too. And, you know, at the end of the year, they found a really nice formula of where they ran the ball and then they did a lot of play action pass off it. And that's where they had success in that first rookie year of Baker Mayfield. Year two, hey, you know, did he make some bad decisions? Do I think he was a little technically off in some of his quarterback mechanics that led to some errant throws and things like that? Definitely. You know, do I think the expectations and everything and trying to answer the bell and prove everybody that they were going to be special affected them? No doubt about it. But do I think he had a head coach that was, you know, over his skis? Definitely. And do I also think, you know, within that, they played a pass first type of game this past year. And I would say, you know, their offensive line is a good run blocking offensive line, but it's one of the poor pass blocking offensive lines. So I always thought that was mixed up about them. But Baker Mayfield, as much as it not being the best year and all those things, it's very real. I get it. Man, he still makes a lot of big time plays and throws. That's the one thing that jumped out to me. I mean, you know, he has the type of arm and playmaking ability to, you know, change the tide of a game, you know, one play. Hey, when you scramble around and hop around the pocket and all of a sudden throw a 25-yard laser, you know, all of a sudden now you're one screen play or one other play away from being in field goal range. Those are game-changing type plays, and he does that a lot. He's got to, you know, go back to the drawing board and fix a few things. But
yeah.
I still think there's a lot of potential and talent with Baker Mayfield.
It's a good note about the offensive line there, too, because that offensive line went from number two in Pro Football Focus's 2018 rankings to number 23 in the rankings last year. And you said the discrepancies with how well they run blocked as opposed to how well they pass blocked. So maybe the offensive talent around them, while better with Odell all around, maybe wasn't better. Baramax asks you this. So if we're going to do the redraft of 2018, the Browns should take Josh Allen, number one, correct?
I was in favor of Josh Allen. I was. I think it's very close between him and Baker Mayfield. I mean, I think they both have superstar potential. I do. Do I think Josh Allen's potential is a little greater than Baker Mayfield? Yes, I do. Do I think, you know, Josh Allen coming into the NFL, was he as polished as Baker Mayfield? No, he wasn't. And I can understand, you know, the Cleveland Browns and them wanting to take Baker Mayfield. I get it. You know, Josh Allen was a little bit of a projection. You know, it looked crappy at times in North Dakota State. We've talked about it. It was bad weather. He didn't have much talent around him. He had like the worst pass protection of any quarterback I've watched in the draft in like the last 8 years. So you kind of had to piece it together. But yes, coming out, I thought Josh Allen was the best quarterback of that class, has the highest potential. And I think last year, you know, he showed that he's on his way too, and he's got a lot of talent as well.
Still haven't seen Josh Allen in your rankings so far. Perhaps. I don't know. We could see something today with Josh Allen. So let's move on to Jimmy Garoppolo, the reaction to the 49ers quarterback. I feel like there aren't many quarterbacks that have as divergent of opinions as Jimmy Garoppolo.
Oh,
you have some
agreed.
People that like to excuse away a lot of the deficiencies, and other people see the deficiencies for what they were this past year. So here's a stat fight between Kyle Sample 6 and Scott Gielen. So two Twitter followers going at it. So let me throw this all at you, Chris, and see what you think. So Kyle says, per Pro Football Focus, the highest completion rate on throws beyond 20-plus yards last season, Jimmy Garoppolo, number one, 61%. Patrick Mahomes, number two, all the way back at 51%. So that looks great for Jimmy G.
Okay, wait. Let's stop right there. Let's stop and go into it before you give me 10 other thoughts to where and then I talk for 20 minutes.
It was related.
Right?
It was related, but
I know but let's just break it down piece by piece. First off, with that stat right there, Patrick Mahomes is in a different solar system as compared to Jimmy Garoppolo on deep throws. Patrick Mahomes makes deep throws happen by Patrick Mahomes making deep throws happen because it's his talent, his ability to buy time. He has a once-in-a-generation type arm. Jimmy Garoppolo's deep throws happen because Kyle Shanahan gets people wide open like a George Kittle against the Green Bay Packers or like Emmanuel Sanders at the end of the Rams game late in the year on a deep post. There's a difference. See, so this is where – you know, context matters. We've got to stop looking at a bottom line stat. And I know PFF is awesome and they have a lot of value. I'm not trying to like crap on them, but context matters in this stuff. And if you put Patrick Mahomes on the 49ers with Kyle Shanahan, they would break the fucking internet with PFF deep ball numbers. Okay. So there's that. Now go on to the next part.
No, I mean, the next part's going to back up. Here's where we back up what you just said. Actually, Scott Gielen did it for us per Football Outsiders. So according to them, Garoppolo was 31st in the NFL on number of deep completions into tight windows. So he had 9. Russell Wilson had 53.
There
so
you go.
It was far and few between the amount of times that Jimmy Garoppolo threw deep, even fewer with tight coverage.
Right.
And so that goes to further illustrate your point there, Chris.
Thank you. I mean, that's why they pay you the big bucks. I appreciate you backing me up. You know, again, I don't, as you know, I don't pay attention to these type of stats. I study it hard. I go off of what my eye tells me, what my studies tell me. And there's a difference. Yes, Russell Wilson. Hey, there's a lot of quarterbacks that we're going to talk about or haven't talked about yet or whatever, where I go, whoa, if you put them up in Seattle and ask them to run Russell Wilson's offense, they would struggle big time. Because a lot of the big plays that happen in Seattle's offense are, hey, receiver, run straight. Whoa, that's such great game planning. And they just they keep going straight, and he keeps throwing dimes and dimes and dimes and dimes. And if you ask some other quarterbacks in football to play that way, there's going to be a quarterback or two today that we're going to talk about where I'd go, they would die up there if they had to play that way. They wouldn't be able to make it work. You wouldn't know them as you know them if they had to play the style that Russell Wilson's asked to play.
So this is interesting because you talked about the way that Jimmy Garoppolo throws, flat-footed throws, needs to improve upon that. HomeQuest Jack asked you, perhaps Jimmy G's flat-footed throws get fixed when he's fully recovered and trusting of his surgically repaired knee. You think part of it was coming back from that ACL injury?
It could be, but this is a thing that I've known for a little while that I've discussed. This goes into even a little bit before he hurt his knee. Now, he could have been being careful with it this past year. It is hard to just let your mind go a year after tearing your ACL and just go into every game and every play and never think about it. You know, I would think there was moments, yes, he was careful about what he was stepping into and who was around him and those things. So that could be part of it. But I saw this little issue even before last year. This had come up with me. So, yeah, again, he's a natural thrower. He's got a quick release. He just uses his upper body too much. He needs to incorporate his legs more. It'll help on those deep throws when there is tight coverage. It'll help Kyle Shanahan have the guts to call maybe more outside the number, deeper type throws as well. If he could just add a little more power on his ball, you know, that would be big. And of course, the big thing is when you throw a ball with more power, right, it gives the receiver just that extra split second of, whoa, I got it. And now I can get my eyes on who's around me. I mean, Brendan Marshall, Joey Galloway, Roy Williams, they used to love how hard I threw the football. You know, they might have not liked it when we were warming up and I was throwing lasers and they were like, damn, can I let my hands warm up? They might have been pissed then. But once the game got going, they loved having the ball on them in a hurry because it allowed them to make a play after the catch.
Pete just sent a message to us, producer Pete, who was watching us as we do this. He said, is Jimmy G's flat-footed style? Oh, no, hold on. Is Jimmy G's flat-footed style? I'm having a hard time with technology today. What helps him get the ball out quickly? If he fixes his feet, could it screw up his release?
No.
Amateur scout not. Pete Demolimelitis.
Okay. No, but it's actually a great question by Pete. That really is, because the fact that he doesn't use his legs and do all that sometimes, it really does help him with some of the short passing. You know, he doesn't have to like have any wasted moment. He could just be there in this position and like, okay, his feet are flat in the ground. Oh, and he gets a little rotation with his upper body and he lets it go. And it does. It helps him get it out of his hand quick and gets it right to the receiver. And he does have a quick release and he's a good flicker. He can just use his wrist and do that kind of stuff. You know, so on the short passing game, I have no issue with it. But what I'm saying more is if you want to change field position or take the pressure off of Kyle Shanahan at times to where he doesn't always have to dial up the perfect play, these incorporating these and his legs would help out just the down the field throws more than anything to answer Pete Demolitis's question.
A lot of people thought it was interesting that you had the two Bay Area quarterbacks so closely ranked and that Derek Carr was ahead of Jimmy Garoppolo. So you had Derek Carr at 19. We did expect maybe some pushback from Raider Nation. We didn't find any though. And trust me, Pete was looking. We always love pushback. This one came from Master James. He said, this breakdown is perfect. That's
Thank
it.
You.
That's
Thank
all he
you,
wrote.
Master James. Listen, I like Derek Carr. He has all the tools to be a top 10 quarterback, Amen. He does. You know, like I said with him, he just got to let it fly. Got to stop playing so careful. You know, he leaves some yards and some plays on the field every week, and it bothers me. But here's why it bothers me, because I know he can do what I'm asking. I see it in the games where I go, whoa, that was a laser. Whoa, what a throw. But then somebody will be open down the middle and he'll try to be too perfect with it and throw the most accurate ball ever. And okay, yeah, the ball was accurate. It hit him right in the chest. But, you know, you threw a changeup and such a slow ball that he caught it and he got tackled. Where I want to say, if you threw a Mahomes or a Rodgers laser, the guy's going to catch it and now have a chance to run away from would-be tacklers and do that. So there is a little bit of that aspect. But Derek Carr is very talented, and he is a really good thrower of the football. I just think it's the aggressive mindset and not looking to be always perfect with placement at times. Just get it to your receiver in a hurry. And then also, I'd like John Gruden and Mike Mayock not to, like, micromanage every minute of his life and always make him feel like, we're not sure you're the future. We might bring somebody in here. We might draft somebody. You know, it's hard to let it go when you always have that kind of, like, hanging over your head.
Yeah, and there aren't a whole lot of quarterbacks, young quarterbacks especially, who have a whole lot of stability with offensive coordinators, head coaches, but Derek Carr certainly has not had a lot of that in Oakland. And so for sure, and I think in a lot of respects, he's already overachieved. You know, I think he's already done perhaps better than some people thought he would be as an NFL quarterback. So props to Derek Carr, 19 on your list. This is a comment, it's unrelated. Negastivio said, not related, but Ahmed said ass on the pod the other day. Does that count as his first swear word?
We'll take it. Yep. Yeah.
Well, you know, you're like you're the legs and ass guy. And so if I don't say that, then how do I even be part of this pod? You know, that's such a huge part of your scouting evaluation that if I refuse to say that, I can't do the podcast effectively.
You're right. You're not allowed to work with me unless you, you know, can say legs and ass, because you know we're going to talk about that. But that's awesome. I did not pick up on that. And thank you, Negastivio. That's cool. I like it.
Great. I mean, that's kind of like a swear, but not totally. Like, it's a swear for me, but not for you.
No,
you would say that, like, in church.
I don't even know. Yeah, I would. I probably would say that in church. You're right.
All right. So that's the reaction from the homies. It's time to reveal four more quarterbacks, 18, Woo-hoo! 17, 16, and then 15. I would do a drum roll on my phone right now, but I've already tried to do too much stuff here. Without further ado, number 18 on your top 40 quarterback countdown list.
Well, number 18 is a guy that you referenced already a little bit, and that is Josh Allen of the Buffalo Bills. There he is. Way to go, producer.
I did it.
He's hosting a show. He's the graphics organizer over here. He's doing it all.
I normally can't host the show just when that's my only job. So it's like now I've got to play audio, click buttons. This is a real challenge.
Well, you're like Josh Allen. You're versatile. And that's what Allen is. You know, let's hit on some of the positives of Josh Allen. First off, the stats don't say it all about Josh Allen. You know, again, context matters. Josh Allen puts a lot of pressure on the defense because of all the different things he can do at the quarterback position. His skill set is special. I think it's fair to say he's the second best running quarterback in football behind Lamar Jackson. You know, he's right there. Deshaun Watson in that conversation too. Probably somebody else I'm missing here off the top of my head. But, you know, we saw him rip off a huge run against the Houston Texans, right, with a quarterback design run in the AFC wildcard game.
Yeah.
The year before, he rushed for almost 300-yard games in a row. I think the third one was like 99 yards rushing. So that puts pressure on a defense, one, because they always have to be prepared for the quarterback, the read option type run game that he can bring to the table. Two, he's unbelievable extending plays. He's a great scrambler, and he's an absolute baller of throwing the football on the run. I mean, he makes some plays when the pocket breaks down and some throws down the field that I just sit there and go, like, whoa. Like, it's Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers stuff at times, the throws he makes, okay? And then, you know, of course, with his big arm, there's no part of the field you can really just, like, say, I don't think he'll go here with the football. He's not scared of any throw. He is not. And he wants to be aggressive, and he wants to make throws that are going to change, you know, the game flow or field position or whatever it may be.
He was 23rd on your list last year. So,
and he's still raw and improving. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. And he's still raw and improving. There's a lot to go here. Now, you got me? You still hear me and everything?
Yeah. Sorry. We got tripped up there a second. I was just reiterating the fact, and I thought you were done there, but it said you had him 23rd last year. So he moved up five spots. I looked, Chris, at some of the numbers from last year, and, you know, the stats, as you always mentioned, don't tell the whole story. But he made improvements. You know, he started all 16 games, where his rookie year, he started 11. His completion percentage went up 6 points, doubled his touchdowns from the year before, reduced his interceptions despite playing in more games. So his interceptions went down from 12 to 9, and that is after throwing 140 more passes. He had 5 game-winning drives, which tied Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson for the most in the NFL.
So many
positive things for Josh Allen here. I noted two things to look at here, and I wonder what you think of it. So he did throw the ball, you know, the air yards for him. He threw the ball less downfield, a little bit more last year. It was like 11 air yards per attempt. His rookie year, it went down to 9, which is still 5th in the league. So he didn't throw the ball as far down the field as he did his rookie year. And he was a little less effective running the ball. His yards per attempt rushing went from 7 to 4.7. So just two things on a year that was really good on balance. Just two things that stuck out to me.
Yeah, well, again, you know, I think some of the things you just said right there, anybody that's doubting Josh Allen, that should silence them. I mean, he brought the team to the playoffs. There was really no game they weren't competitive in. You saw them improve. Clutch game-winning drives. That says something. You know, there is a lot to work with here. Yeah, again, teams know about his running ability, right, in year two. I think the Bills were a little reluctant to call more quarterback design runs just because they went, man, this guy's special. He's like our future. Let's not run him into the ground. So I think that affects the stats. And then the deep ball throwing, you know, I would say he probably had a little bit of a conscious effort to go not be so aggressive, not always just like when in doubt, uncork it and let it fly.
Yeah.
Let alone they don't really have deep ball threats there in Buffalo. Like, I know John Brown can fly. He's fast. He's a really small target. Okay. And, you know, yeah, they're not an offense that's always looking for those deep shots all the way. And John Brown, again, is good. But, you know, as I always say, there's a reason he was on Arizona and Baltimore and now his third team here in 4 years. So I think they, with the addition of Stephon Diggs, and this is what I wanted to say. Listen, he's done this last 2 years with not the best supporting cast you've ever seen in football. Right. I mean, I think that's another thing that's worth noting. He didn't have Tyreek Hill. He doesn't have DeAndre Hopkins. He didn't have some of those guys. No Odell Beckham Jr., no Jarvis Landry. So within all that, he still played really well. But the point is, and what you know and what I know because we've talked about this, he does still have to improve his accuracy. There is still some times where I go, dude, you don't have to throw the ball 145 miles per hour. Let's just throw it 90 miles per hour. And, you know, he does at times have a little bit of the Baker Mayfield thing where he lets his arm just get too whippy, right? It's just too all over the place. And, you know, it's hard to always control the ball and put it where you want to when you let your arm get that loose. I wish he would tighten that up. I know he has it in him because I see it. But I really think Josh Allen has superstar potential. And I would be shocked if he doesn't climb up these rankings significantly more next year.
I agree. I mean, just with Stephon Diggs, but then you also add in the backfield, Zach Moss, in the draft that they got in the third round to pair up with Devin Singletary, should have a solid running game for him. You mentioned he didn't get any help from his receivers. He had the highest drop percentage of any quarterback in the league last year, 7% of his passes. You mentioned sometimes that is the fault of the quarterback.
It is. Well, he can throw it too hard. You know, sometimes that's really the issue where it's just like, hey, he's 6 feet from you. You don't need to knock his head off here. So, yeah, I would, you know, drops, of course, receivers, yes, but sometimes some of those I'm sure were on the quarterback and on Josh Allen.
He was also 27th in the league in yards after the catch per completion, so it wasn't like his receivers were ripping off a ton after they caught it. And so all stuff that a better crew around him can help. And I will throw this at you because remember when we talked about Brady getting together with his teammates and you complimented Tom Brady and you said, yeah, these young quarterbacks should learn. We got some pushback because you know Josh Allen had done that a little bit, and he was in May working out in Florida with Stephon Diggs, John Brown, Dawson Knox. And so it seems like he has figured out a way to be a team leader, even in the mid of COVID-19 here.
Yeah. You know, when I got to visit him last year around this time up in Buffalo and I got to spend a day with him, he's a team leader. It's natural for him. I could tell with the way the players and coaches gravitated towards him throughout the day that this is a guy they believe in. And you could tell it's more than just belief on the football field. Like they like the guy. And I do too. It's, you know, he certainly, you know, charmed me or whatever, but I could see he's got the personality to be a special quarterback and the leadership skills and the communication skills and all of those things. So I'm not surprised that he did that. And yeah, like I said, I'm a believer in Josh Allen. I think he's got all the tools to be special, let alone he's got some of the best legs and ass in the NFL, which I just saw Pete DeMoletis text us. Yes.
So I was going to do that. He read my mind. So we've often talked about Josh Allen in shorts. I feel like the whole Josh Allen wearing shorts meme started with you somehow. I don't know how that happened, but maybe one time you interviewed him, he was wearing shorts. So I racked my brain and I was like, okay, who are the top five quarterbacks in shorts currently in the NFL? So here's my list. See if you agree. You ready?
Yep.
Jimmy Garoppolo at 5. 4, Patrick Mahomes. 3, Cam Newton. I bent my rules there. Not technically in the NFL, but not retired either. 2, Dak Prescott. Solid lower half. And number 1, Josh Allen. So those are my top 5. best in shorts.
I think you hit all the right ones there. I probably would have gave Dak Prescott number one. And Josh Allen's impressive, but Dak, when I saw him in person, I was like, oh, he's got the edge on Josh Allen in the ass and legs department. Dak is so well put together. And he's probably one of those guys, like, if he went in the weight room and really lifted hard for a week, he could be like, he could put 15 pounds of muscle on. He's just gifted that way. But I think you hit all the main ones. Maybe the one guy you're missing that I just think deserves to be in the conversation, Derek Carr, not a bad legs and butt, and ooh, Russell Wilson. Both of them got a little more junk in the trunk than we would think.
Russell Wilson might be an omission there, a glaring omission. But the fact that you would have Dak Prescott one may be part of the reason we haven't seen him so far on the Chris Sims top 40.
Doesn't all have to do with his ass, okay?
One more note I want to throw in here on Josh Allen, and this is not insignificant. In his career on 4th and 1, he has converted 23 of 24 quarterback sneaks, best in the NFL over the past 2 years. How crucial is that? 4th and 1, your drive's over if you don't get it. He's gotten it 23 of 24 times. That's not insignificant.
No, it's not. And again, there's not a stat that really shows that to the public on a weekly basis. So there you go. There's more stats that kind of get lost in the shuffle there, but add context to the importance of what he really is. Think about the Thanksgiving game against the Cowboys. You remember that 4th down? There was like a fumbled snap exchange. He went down, picked up the ball, and like jumped over the line of scrimmage and took on a middle linebacker and got a 1st down. I mean, you know, again, that didn't show up after that game was over, but that was a huge play that helped Buffalo kind of put Dallas in a tough spot because they went on to score that drive. And there's not going to be anything statistically after the game that's going to say, nobody helped Josh Allen on that play. He did it all himself, and it was a huge play to get them over the hump to win the game.
All right, so 18 is Josh Allen. We're moving closer to the top 15, but we're not there yet. Number 17, Chris, on your top 40 quarterback countdown list.
Here we go. You ready with your little machine there?
I'm so nervous. Yeah.
It's Philip Rivers. All right. Philip Rivers, Indianapolis Colts. I still got to get used to saying that. I almost said Chargers. But, you know, Josh Allen, Philip Rivers still make a ton of plays. In fact, the other two quarterbacks we're about to talk about that are at number 15 and 16, Philip Rivers and Josh Allen make more plays than those two guys we're going to talk about here in a few minutes. Now, they can be a little careless with the ball at times, and that's why I probably docked them down to be 17 and 18. But Philip Rivers, one of those guys, again, some crucial mistakes and some big moments last year, no doubt about that. You know, but like we've talked about a little on this show already, it's going to happen sometimes when your offensive line's not good, you know, the running game's struggling, and basically the game depends on you making plays. You know, so he had to kind of like flirt with danger a lot, and it came back to bite him in the ass. We know that. But the other thing that comes out, I mean, you talk about a guy that's still as tough as there is, hanging in the pocket, waiting for receivers to come open downfield, you know, not afraid to pull the trigger into a tight window down the field or throw a ball into an area where he goes, man, my big Mike Williams, he can jump up and get this over the middle. I'm going to put it high over the middle. Whoa, 25-yard completion. Holy cow, here come the Chargers. I mean, there is just so much of that. But as we know, yeah, the negative is, you know, being careless with the football at times, especially in some big moments. And two of those were on national TV. But I don't want it to be, you know, mistaken here. He can still make a lot of plays and help your team win football games. It's only 2 years ago he went 12-4 with the Chargers. Let's not forget that aspect of it. You know, this is – he hasn't lost his way. Their offensive line in Los Angeles last year was one of the poorer ones in all of football. And, you know, I think Philip Rivers at times tried to do too much, and it came back and bit him in the ass a few times.
Yeah, I think – when I think of all my favorite skill position groupings in the NFL, I put the Colts offensive line in there. I know they're not skill position guys, but I like them that much, and they have so much talent there on that Colts offensive line with Costanzo and Quentin Nelson, Braden Smith, and Ryan Kelly.
Right, and Ahmed, to your point, that's going to embolden Rivers to not have to take so many chances too. He's going to go, wait, you know, I don't need to try to fit this ball in here on 1st and 10. So what? I'll throw it away. Second and 10, we might call a run play, and Quentin Nelson might clean out the right side of the line, and my running back might run for 40 yards. So why would I force this ball in there? So I think the supporting cast and having a guy like Frank Reich, who he's worked with before, and the fact that he's had to change teams and the stigmas around him, I would be shocked if he doesn't correct it, and especially because of what you brought up, that offensive line.
Yeah, what do you think about Frank Wright? So he's got Frank Wright again with Nick Sirianni, who is the offensive coordinator. He's got familiarity with them, spent 3 years together with the Chargers. That was 2014, 2015 with Reich as the offensive coordinator. And I looked up in 2015, Rivers threw the ball 661 times, by far the most in his career. I doubt they replicate that this year, just with the running game they have with Marlon Mack, and then they drafted Jonathan Taylor as well. Right. But how much do you make of the fact that their familiarity with each other and how that could take Rivers to another level here at 38 years old?
Yeah, well, it's you know, at least he's going to be in his comfort zone to a degree. Yeah, he's learning a new offense, and I need to turn the lights on in here. We're having a rainstorm come about here, and I'm getting dark.
I wondered what was
minute.
Happening there. I kind of like the ominous look.
Good thing I wore this white shirt. And I'm the whitest man in America. You can still see me in the dark.
Natural glow, yeah.
Yes, natural glow. But I think, you know, I think the fact that it won't be too overwhelming learning the offense and doing stuff like that. Frank Reich will know some common terms that he might have had in his old offense. Nick Sirianni being there. It'll be an easy translation for, you know, this meant that. Now this means this here, right? I don't think it's going to be like too much mental gymnastics. And I'm a huge fan of Frank Reich. I really am. You know, what I've seen out of Frank Reich in that offense the last 2 years, I see weekly creativity and a weekly toughness to their football team. And, you know, I think with some of the receivers they got there already, their second round pick, Paris Campbell from last year, he was hurt a lot last year. I think he's got a big time talent. The addition of Jonathan Taylor, who I expect to be the starting running back, you know, decent tight ends, all of that. I just think everything is in place for for Phillip Rivers and the Colts to be a very relevant team this year, and I think going to be one of the better teams in the AFC.
And don't underestimate that fire from Phillip Rivers. I saw this quote in one of the stories when I was perusing around. He said, quote, "At times, what may have been may have aggravated me a little bit last year was when the critics were saying I couldn't play anymore. When you heard that, it bothered me because I wanted to go shoot, go turn on the tape and watch all the good things." And so I think there is a little bit of a rejuvenation here for Phillip Rivers. I mean, leaving the Chargers and San Diego and LA for the first time, 17th year in the league now, I think there's going to be some fire for Phillip Rivers to show, like, I'm not done. I'm 38, but I'm not done yet.
I agree. I mean, you know, he's always got, you know, something poking at his ass to make him mad or motivated or whatever it may be. I mean, a hot poker poking at it. Okay. He's always looking for anything. And I think the change of scenery and a little bit of the national disrespect is certainly going to get him on his P's and Q's. And I'll say this might be the best point of all. And this is what I know, you know, there were plenty of teams interested in Phillip Rivers' services this year in free agency. You know, I think Tampa had their eye on him. The Tennessee Titans, if it didn't get worked out with Ryan Tannehill, I think that was going to be the next choice. And, of course, we know the Colts liked them. So, you know, between that, I don't think those teams have interest in him unless they go, whoa, he can still play. He can still make plays. And, I think he's viewed a little bit better in league circles than he is maybe by us and fans and everything else.
Trivia question. Phillip Rivers has 9 children now. How many did he have the last time that he says he made a significant move? So he's moved across the country now, West Coast to Indianapolis. He has 9 kids now. How many kids did he have the last time he moved?
Well, okay, wait, you're not count. Oh, yeah, he never moved from San Diego to L.A. I forgot about it. So the last time he moved is when he was drafted, right? I don't think he moved from San Diego to L.A. because wasn't he taking that van back to work every day?
Correct.
And all that?
Yeah, they didn't move the family.
I think I want to say he had 2 kids as like a rookie in the NFL when he was already making his way. Am I right about that?
He had one kid. And now, 8 kids later, he's moved. For
the- He's been busy.
He's been very busy on and off.
I'm going to stand up for a second because I'm going to turn this light on, but I'm still listening. Okay. I'm right here.
All right. All right. So that's Phillip Rivers at 17, Josh Allen at 18. There was some interest for Phillip Rivers on the market out there as Chris is getting his lighting right. That looks
That's too bright.
A little bright, but that's okay.
Whoa.
We got to get the lighting right for this one, Chris, because this is going to cause a little bit of a brouhaha.
Hold on. Don't start yet. I got
to. I'm not going to because we need the lighting perfect. We need your shirt sleeves. Yeah.
That's not the best, is it?
Okay. Stand back up. If you're listening out to the podcast right now, Chris just keeps standing up. You see his shirt and then he sits back down. He's going back up again. His chin is prominently displayed in the screen. You can see his teeth. Now he's moving back. He's got the lighting fixed, everyone.
I'm going right now. I'm going with this. This is all.
No, this looks. This actually looks better than your normal lighting. Well done.
Thanks. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Good. Okay. Pull it back together because this is where it gets real. This is where it gets real. Get the notebook. Your number 16 quarterback in your top 40 countdown is
would be the legend of New Orleans, Drew Brees. Yes, I know. Number 16, uh-oh. I'm sure I'm going to get a lot of flack from this. I got a lot of flack last year from putting in number 10. But I would like to pat myself on the back and say, Chris, you did a good job. That was a very proper ranking. Again, you know, we all have to get out of this. Drew Brees at 16 at the age of whatever he is, 40, 41.
41.
I mean, that's amazing. First off, I just want everybody to know that, that he's still playing at this level at this age. And certainly playing at a level that you can win a Super Bowl with the team around you. And he can do that. He can lead them to a Super Bowl this year, his last year playing in the NFL. But for anybody to think like he's still in the top 10 or maybe in the top 5, like this is all I have to say to you. The Saints wouldn't be pushing him out the door for Taysom Hill if he was still a top 5 or a top 10 quarterback. Like that's all you need to know. If he was still playing at that high of a level, they would go, hey, we'll sign you to a few more years on the contract or whatever it may be. So I'm just giving everybody a little context clue. That should speak to something. Now, with him on the field, hey, Drew Brees, we know accuracy is his game. Accuracy, timing, his ability to diagnose a defense and get to the right guy on the offensive side of the ball as fast as anybody we've ever seen in the history of the sport. He's still really awesome at all of that stuff. He's still a decent athlete, too, for his age. He moves around the pocket. He can scramble for 4 and 5 yards every now and then and do stuff like that. So all those things are real, no doubt about it. And when you give him an offensive system, because of experience, yeah, he can execute that system as good as anybody in the sport. Now, he'd be one of those guys, I'd tell you, if he had to go up in Seattle and play in that Russell Wilson offense, I'd go, well, this wouldn't be the same Drew Brees. He couldn't do some of that stuff. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful, but not at this point of his career, you know, and his ability to throw the ball down the field and make those game-changing throws or those field position type-changing throws, it's going downhill. There's no denying that. I don't know if you have the numbers to back that up, but I would expect that you might. But either way, they're bringing in Taysom Hill to throw a lot of deep balls, which should tell you there's a reason for that too. And to me, that's the biggest negative about Drew Brees' game right now. When we've seen them struggle in the playoffs and against some better defenses, it's the teams basically just go, we're not worried about anything 20 yards or deeper. We're going to crowd the middle of the field. We're going to play short passes and do that and take away Kamara and Michael Thomas over the middle. And that's when it becomes Troubleville for the Saints and Drew Brees and that offense.
So that makes sense to me. That may be why you could see things changing for him in 2020 as opposed to what they were in 2019. Because the numbers indicate, you know, just raw numbers and stats for Drew Brees. Again, to reiterate your point, stats often can lie. You know, he led the league in completion percentage, 27 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He had the highest quarterback rating of his career, second in the NFL. PFF had him rated as the second best quarterback last year, just behind Russell Wilson. So they were very high on what Drew Brees did on the field. So I think a lot of times last year people grouped, you know, Tom Brady, Drew Brees together in your top 40 and crushed you for it, and they were both together. I think you were definitely vindicated on Tom Brady. I do feel like Drew Brees had a good enough year to where you say, all right, well, maybe he can replicate that at least for one more, Chris.
Well, you know, I'm sure he can. I don't deny that. But, you know, the big thing is the offense delivers a lot. And completion percentage to me is a little bit of an overrated stat. You know, yeah. One, I want to say to Drew Brees, hey, I'd wish you'd throw for 65% and throw some more balls down the field and deep post and things like that. They're going to make defenses guard the whole field and maybe get on their back of their heels a little bit when they're a safety or a corner playing and those type of things. The numbers are going to look good for no matter who plays quarterback for the New Orleans Saints. I'm sorry. That's the only way I can put it. I mean, we've seen Luke McCown come in and he hasn't played in 4 years when he was the backup, but it's 300 yards and touchdowns and no interceptions. So this is one of the greatest offensive minds football has ever seen in Sean Payton, let alone there's great talent around Drew Brees at the offensive line position and running back and receiver and tight end, okay? So we've got some real difference makers there. And, you know, again, to me, the ability to make plays and explosive plays other than turnovers is still the second biggest factor in winning football games.
Yeah.
And Drew Brees doesn't deliver a lot of those type throws. And, sure. And if he does, I would say more times than not, there are short throws that end up going for 20-plus yard type throws. And there's a difference there too. And I think it's a big reason they've struggled in some big moments the last few years. Because like I said, all of a sudden you're playing the Vikings, you're playing the Rams, you're playing some of the Vikings again in this playoff. Oh, their defense is good. Whoa, they got a defensive mind on the other side that takes away some of Sean Payton's stuff. And then all of a sudden the Saints offense doesn't look very scary. And you know, that would be, you know, that's where Drew Brees is at this point of his career. Hey, seven years ago, Drew Brees could scare you with his arm. And then that made things really dangerous. But right now, I don't think he has that effect.
So here's the numbers to back you up on that. So air yards per attempt, the distance the ball traveled downfield past the line of scrimmage. Only three quarterbacks had fewer air yards per attempt than Drew Brees last year. Do you think you can name them? You think you know the three quarterbacks who had fewer air yards per attempt than Drew Brees? Proves your point. He was down there amongst the bottom in the NFL. We've talked about two of them already today.
Talked about two of them already today?
Yep.
And like in the, I don't know. Go ahead. Just tell me.
Jimmy G, Derek Carr, and Teddy Bridgewater. So, no mistake. He was also in the
same. It's all the same offense, too. I mean, it's all the same offense. John Gruden. Hey, Kyle Shanahan learned for John Gruden. John Gruden and Sean Payton are best friends. They run the same offense, you know. And Teddy Bridgewater, of course, was playing for Sean Payton, too. But, yes, those Payton and Shanahan are offensive geniuses, and they know how to expose defenses in the middle of the field. And that's where they are special. And, hey, a lot of times, Ahmed, they literally have plays where it's, hey, Drew, I want you to look over here and act like you're looking at something, but I'm going to work something over here on the backside, and it's just for one guy. And it's all about that because – They literally have a number of plays in their offenses like that. I used to run them with John Gruden. You know, people would go like, how did you read that on, you know, how'd you read that play? And I wanted to be, I only throw to that guy. There's nothing to read. I'm looking over here just to make the defense move a little bit. You know, so on those type of plays too, I'm not going to sit there and go, oh my gosh, what amazing quarterback play. The coach told him to look there and then look over there and throw to the open guy. Whoa, who could do that? So that's my little spiel on that one.
So what I would say to that, though, so he's 41 years old. He's spent, you know, 14 years in the Sean Payton system there in New Orleans. So say the premise of this is you take a quarterback to win on your team for 1 year in 2020. He won't have Sean Payton anymore. I would argue Drew Brees knows the Sean Payton offense, knows what he's trying to do. He could install all the things that you say make his life so easy himself and have a very, very successful year.
Oh, so he's going to be able to call the plays to wrap the game and do that? Is he going to bring Michael Thomas, Jared Cook, and Alvin Kamara with him?
Just that he doesn't necessarily like get. No, he doesn't get
what
that.
What about the top five offensive line in football? Does he get to bring with them too? Oh, no. Oh, so
but what
sorry.
About That's... the – true. So you need the talent as far as the Sean Payton. But you give him a lot of credit, though, because he does operate in the Sean Payton system. How much could he replicate on his own at this point, you think?
Oh, I mean, he certainly could replicate and bring some of those plays somewhere else, right? And go, okay, this is what I got, and hey, we should infuse this. And they're going to go, whoa, this is how Sean Payton taught this? Yes, let's put that in our offense, you know? So, yes, there is certainly some of that. But also within that, whoever that guy is going to go, wait, we have to cancel some of these things out of our offense because Drew can't make that throw or that's not realistic to ask him to do. So you're going to lose some offense too that way. So, you know, good question by you, certainly. I still have a lot of respect for Drew Brees. I know people think I don't like him. Yes, do I think he's a little overrated in the all-time ranks and things like that? Yeah, I do. I'm sorry. But I know he's still a first-ballot Hall of Famer and a really special, special quarterback.
So Drew Brees, 16, get the Twitter mentions flowing towards Chris immediately after that one. Or maybe wait till you talk about your number 15 quarterback, Chris.
Oh, yeah. You got to like, so, yeah, you think? Yeah. Okay, so let's go, Mr. Graphics Designer. Number 15, Tom Brady, Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Yes, sir. You know, again, I'd like to reiterate, just like it with Drew Brees, Tom Brady's still good enough to where he can win a Super Bowl. I'd like to reiterate, again, we put the quarterback on a pedestal and give him way too much credit. You know that. I say that all the time. And we've seen a lot of average quarterbacks go deep in the playoffs over the last 5-6 years. Quarterbacks on rookie contracts. Hey, the worst quarterback in the NFL won the Super Bowl in 2016. And it was the worst quarterback statistically and realistically, and that was Peyton Manning because he had an awesome defense around him, and they just managed the game to where the offense didn't mess it up. So I just want to make that clear. Tom Brady, though, to get back to him, you know, the first thing is his arm is still real good. Is it great like it used to be? No, but it's still real good to where he can make all the throws everywhere around the field. He can throw the 20-yard out routes and the deep balls or – people are in his face, and he could throw a deep post down the middle. He does have that explosiveness still available in his arm. You know, of course, like a Drew Brees, his ability to dissect and read and react to a defense and react and make the proper throw, it's genius the way he is. He's like Van Gogh with the quarterback position. He's an artist. I mean, he really is. His ability to move in the pocket is still very good for being one of the least athletic, you know, quarterbacks in football. His pocket awareness is great. Now, where the negative comes in is his pocket awareness is a little too aware right now. He's a little reluctant to want to stand in there and make throws down the field like you and I talked about during the season a lot, you know. And he's not going to make any plays for you outside of the pocket either. So those are the things, let alone – I think he's lost a little bit of his aggressive nature from what I saw, you know, even at the end of the 2018 year, but certainly in the 2019 year, to where, yes, I feel like I don't want to say he was a Charlie checkdown or anything like that. But as you heard me say many times during the year, there were times where I went, ooh, there's a 20-yard completion. Or, ooh, the guy on the left side's running away from man-to-man coverage. He could throw him a bomb. And he decided to take an easy throw or an easy completion. And that to me, yes, he left some yards and plays on the field during the season, and that's why he's number 15.
There are going to be, Chris, some people that are going to immediately question it and say, there are 14 other quarterbacks currently in the NFL that you would take on a one-year deal over Tom Brady. And you're saying, yes, that's the whole point of the exercise. But I'll bring it back to something you said about Phillip Rivers. You said there was a market for Phillip Rivers. A lot of teams checked in on Rivers, and I don't know, it almost appears, Chris, as there was a bigger market for Phillip Rivers than Tom Brady, which would support your thesis here.
Well, I, you know, We know that there was a little bit of a market maybe for San Francisco and Brady. I think Brady really wanted to go there more than they wanted him.
He was making that market himself almost.
Right. Yeah. But they did admit they thought about it, right? You know, I don't know if the Colts were ever really interested in Brady. I don't know that. I know, of course, and I reported at the time that Tampa was the real player, and I knew once San Francisco was out of the conversation, it was between New England and Tampa. So, you know, again, Tom Brady, people wanted Tom Brady. I think the Tennessee Titans probably would have too. They would have been another guy they would have talked to seriously if it didn't work out with Ryan Tannehill. But you also have to know with guys like Tom Brady, man, it's like, okay, you know, if we're the 49ers, do we really want to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo, who's going this way? Maybe not as good as Brady at this second, but he's going this way and Brady's going that way. And who knows, maybe they intersect at some point during the year and Garoppolo passes him up. And also, to a point I just said with Drew Brees, listen, if Brady was a top five or top 10 quarterback in football still, New England wouldn't have let him go. I mean, that's really like the basis of it. Teams don't let go top 10 quarterbacks in football. They don't just go, man, we've got one of the 10 best. Let's get them out of here and see if we can find somebody maybe in the top 10. No, absolutely not. You know, and again, as good as Brady is, I do think that one of my big concerns with them in Tampa is their offensive line. Bruce Arians asking them to stand in the pocket and do those type of things. But to what you brought up with Drew Brees, I think he's going to infuse some of his New England type plays into the offense to give it a little bit more of a, you know, variety look. But again, Tom Brady, if he'll stand in there and he's willing to take shots, he can still make big time game changing type throws. But I would also say, again, there's reluctance. Hey, Ahmed, the Tennessee Titans wild card game, the week 17 game against the Miami Dolphins. You know, all he needed to do was make a few plays to win, especially the wild card game. You know, one big throw, one big move in the pocket, make something happen. Yeah. And he didn't do it against a pass rush that was very average in Tennessee. It was not an average, I mean, not a good pass rush. You know, so that's why I'm not saying that to bag on Brady. I'm just trying to explain to people this is where we're at in his career. He's not going to carry the team anymore. They didn't win one game because of Tom Brady last year. It wasn't like, whoa, if we didn't have Brady, we wouldn't have won that. That was the first time in the Brady era that never happened. And, you know, again, you know me. I'm into what are you doing if the offense doesn't deliver for you all the time? And I thought there was some times last year where, you know, unlike years past, Brady didn't deliver when the offense maybe wasn't serving up open receivers or executing them on all levels.
So what do you think about this? The Patriots, like you mentioned, obviously thought it was time to move on from their veteran quarterback, the Hall of Famer, going with Jarrett Stidham, who is 35th on your list. And so you got Brady at 15th on your list. So it seems to reason that the Patriots went with the worst quarterback this year. At what point do you think, you talked about the intersecting career trajectories, at what point is Jarrett Stidham above Tom Brady here?
Yeah, I mean, that'll be the big question, right? Because you know they're going to get compared to each other throughout the year. And, you know, of course, that won't be fair because we know that Tampa's got way better offensive talent than up in New England. Now, New England's talent in the offensive side of the ball, I think, is better than people wanted to give it credit for last year. I think a lot of people were making excuses for Brady and everything like that. But it wasn't perfect. There's no doubt about that. And it added a lot of pressure on to Brady, who's, as we've talked about, 42 years old. Listen, can Stidham play the position as pure as Brady does? I don't know. I mean, that's where we don't know yet. I do think he has it in him. But do I think Stidham's God-given talent and ability is better than Brady right now at this moment? No doubt about it. And you know, if Stidham can gain some confidence early on and they don't have to ask him to win games and they can play through their defense, that intersection could happen week 10, week 12 of the year.
Wow.
Again, this isn't like New England, like, oh, we lost Brady. What are we going to do at quarterback? Oh, let's go with that guy, Stidham. No, Stidham was part of the plan for a long, long time. And I think they were thrilled with what they saw out of Stidham coming out of college, what they saw in the preseason, which was really awesome. And I think, you know, that led them on to the 2019, embarkment of, hey, I think we got somebody here, and I think we'll be able to live with life after Tom, and we might have somebody for the future.
Do you think the offensive line, and you mentioned it briefly there, they drafted Tristan Wirfs, 13 overall. It seems like Tom Brady, as much as any quarterback out there, needs the time and needs a strong offensive line. You saw him last year at times try to get rid of it maybe a little too quickly because he didn't trust his pass protection. Do you feel like that offensive line is going to be good enough for Tom to be successful and give those weapons time to get down the field?
Yeah, it's a huge question, and I can't say, like, yes, I feel good about it, but I think there's two things in play that I think have to happen there. One, I think Brady does have to infuse some of that short passing game that's been so magical over the years up in New England. He's going to have to teach Bruce Arians and Byron Leftwich some of those plays, some of their wide receiver screens. You know, they're going to have to play a game a little bit of, we need to run some of these plays to slow down the other team's pass rush, right? Whether it's screens to the receivers or the running backs or, you know, misdirection type plays that just take away they're going to have to be creative that way because, I don't expect their offensive line to be top five or top 10 in football. I don't. I think it's going to be kind of the middle of the road type of offensive line. And I think if they want to get accomplished, the big throws down the field, the Godwin and Evans and Gronk and all that they're going to have to give defenses a lot to think about. To then, okay, now we're going to run a play, drop back, and I need some time to dissect things and make a big play down the field to Evans or Gronk or whoever it may be.
It's kind of actually still amazing that we're talking about Tom Brady as the 15th best quarterback in the NFL at the age of 43
is what he'll be when the season begins. Exactly. That's where I want to say to people who are going to crush me later today and tomorrow and be like, oh, you're crazy. You're so disrespectful of Tom Brady. I know I don't think Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback of all time. I still love Tom Brady. I think he's amazing. He's certainly one of the top three of all time. And the fact that he's about to be 43 and he's still in the top half of the starting quarterbacks in football is fucking ridiculous. Okay. I don't know any other way to say it. Yeah. So, I have a lot of respect for the guy. I do. I just don't think he's the guy that we saw 4 or 5 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever. Yeah, it's catching up to him a little bit. You can't expect them to carry the squad on a week-to-week basis. That no longer is going to happen. And I think we saw plenty of evidence of that last year.
So real quick before I let you go, I saw this. Best production from 43-year-olds in the NFL ever. I wanted to look up who has done anything in the NFL at the age of 43, which
George
Tom Brady
Blanda.
George Blanda is number one because he got some value as a kicker along with being a quarterback. So he was number one for Oakland. Number two and number three were both kickers, Matt Bryant and Adam Vinatieri. So basically, We've never seen anything like this before. And I will toss one more point your way. Warren Moon, a lot of people respect what he did as a 40-year-old quarterback in the NFL. He just came out with some quotes talking to Colin Cowherd the other day saying that he sees what you see, Chris, that the fact that Breeze and Brady are losing some of their arm strength, losing some of their ability, and some of it comes from their legs and not being able to use them as much at the end of the season, Chris.
I think he's spot on with that. You know, I think it's more of a problem for Breeze than Brady, but I certainly see it in Brady, and I saw it towards the end of the year last year. And again, the legs are always, a big clue. Look at Brady. If you went back and watched the Super Bowl 42 from 2007, if you look Brady's lower half in that uniform as compared to now, you would go, whoa, yeah, there is a difference. I just didn't realize it because, we just watch it on a year-to-year basis. But you know me, I'm a psycho. I'm sitting here going to go watch, NFL films here in a little while, and I look at shit like that. But yes, there is a difference, and legs are a big part of the throwing like we've talked about. And Warren Moon's one of the greatest throwers of all time. He knows what he's talking about on that subject.
All right, Chris. So go watch your NFL films and get ready to respond to your Twitter messages because you have Breeze and Brady outside of your top 10.
Yeah, I know. I'm ready for it, but it's all right. I mean, I think at least I've proven myself a little last year to back some people off, so maybe they'll be able to accept it a little bit better this year. Probably not. You're right. Probably not. You're an asshole, Robin. Thank you.
All right. That's it. Man. I think we covered it.
You the man. Great pod. Always fun doing it with you, dude. Thanks for all your tidbits and backing me up with some stats. I always need that. I need a I need a hype man. I need somebody with some muscles behind me so nobody messes with me. Yep.
We'll get a guy with muscles next time.
I don't know if I saw any muscles there, but either way. But Chris Sims, Ahmed Farid, hope you enjoyed Chris Sims' Unbuttoned podcast. The Sims Top 40 Countdown will continue next week, as you know. Tuesday, Thursday, hopefully we'll have Big Phil in the fold again next Thursday. Ahmed, do you know what day you're working next week? Are you the Tuesday or Thursday host next week?
I think Thursday, but I don't even know anymore. The world's a blur still for me.
Who the hell cares? The world is a blur. Everybody be safe out there. Hey, be careful. There's a lot of things going on in the world, but let's keep being better people all together. And send your questions and mentions at me. You know I'm willing to talk about it and take it head on. But you the man, Ahmed. Have a good weekend. Peace out. I'm out of here.
Later, Chris.
See you, dude.